split to join the army of the blue. We left our home to fight the rebs in 1862. Nashville, Missionary Ridge, the battle and the gore, till we camped outside Atlanta's door. The night before we crossed the creek, the French harp whispered low. The fire crackled quietly within the amber glow. The army of the Cumberland was struck by General Hood. 10th Michigan, we held the line, fighting bravely where we stood.
That was singer, folk singer Neil Woodward, who sings Peachtree Creek, a song written by David Norris of Flint in honor of his great-grandfather, Talman Owens, who fought in the Flint's 10th Infantry Regiment in the Civil War in the battle at Peachtree Creek. Peachtree Creek, of course, was the significant battle, critical one, that resulted in the fall of Atlanta during the Civil War, ultimately led to the end of the Civil War. Our episode today is a fantastic review of the city of Flint and the area's involvement in the Civil War, and the effort by the state of Michigan and others to save the history of our flags. There are battle flags, 240 battle flags, which were taken into the Civil War by those brave soldiers in Michigan, some 90,000 of them, who fought the Confederacy and won the war. At the end of the war, they came back to Michigan and presented their battle flags to the governor, who was from Flint, Henry Crapo. This is the story of Save the Flags and Flint's 10th Infantry Regiment in honor of Talman Owens of Flint, Michigan. I hope you enjoy. Okay, good morning. This is Arthur Bush. You're listening to Radio Free Flint. I'm your host. We have a great program today. About a project which has been ongoing for over 100 years, I think, and it's called Save the Flags. So with us today, we have Matt Van Auker, who is the, I better get your title correct, Matt, help me out.
I direct the Tour Education and Information Service at the State Capitol, and then serve as the curator of the Save the Flags project.
Okay, and then I also have Flint's own David Norris, who's a history buff, and who got who first got us interested in this subject, and his interest in this Save the Flags project, especially as it relates to Flint. So today we're going to talk about what is Save the Flags, why it's important to Michigan, and why it's important to preserve our history. And then we're going to talk about the 10th Regiment flag, which was a battle flag that was of those who fought from Flint, Michigan in the Civil War with Sherman's army all the way to the sea, meaning all the way to Atlanta. And then we'll come back and chat a little bit about what this flag's role was within the battles themselves and why it is such a significant symbolic so symbolically significant to our nation. All right, Matt, tell us what is the project that you're now involved with, which is run by the government, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to. I wanted to thank you for the invitation to join you on your podcast. Any information we can get out there amongst the citizens of the state about our project is a good thing. So our project actually started about 30 years ago in 1990 with the restoration of the state capitol. One of the reasons the capitol was constructed the way it was in 1879 was to serve obviously as the seat of state government, but I think even more importantly to some of the people back then, was to serve really as a memorial to the sacrifices that the state of Michigan made during the Civil War. And what they referred to back then is just the war. There was no question about which war they were referring to when they said the war. It was also meant to serve as a fitting and fireproof place to store and display the original battle flags that our soldiers had carried so proudly with them in the war. You know, the 1860 census of Michigan listed her population at approximately 750,000 citizens. 5 years later, by the spring of 1865, Michigan had sent over 90,000 of her father's sons and brothers to the battlefields of that terrible war. That constituted, to put this in perspective, something people can grasp a little more readily, that constituted about 50% of our eligible male population. Just an incredible contribution.
That's about one in two out of every eligible male actually fought in the war.
Exactly. You could imagine that by standards of modern warfare. I don't think our citizens would tolerate such a contribution if one and half of our eligible citizens were off fighting in the war. Back then, though, during the war, enlistments were encouraged and the citizens supported the war effort and trying to end slavery and trying to preserve the Union. So at the end of the war, these regiments returned to their home states, and they had a grand ceremony in Detroit on July 4th, 1866. It was estimated that a tenth of this population of the state, about 75,000 people, turned out for this ceremony. And at that time, you mentioned Governor Crapo, Flint's own Governor Crapo, accepted the battle flags on behalf of the state of Michigan. And Governor Crapo made a solemn pledge to those boys that on that very hot day in July, out in the campus martius in Detroit. And he said, basically, as long as the old peninsular state has a name and a place in this nation, these flags will be preserved, her proudest possessions in her state archives. So the flags, when the Capitol eventually was built here in Lansing in 1879, the flags came into the Capitol. They were first kept in a military museum on the first floor in the south hall of the building. And then in the winter of 1908, 1909, they were transferred out to the cases in the rotunda, where I actually remember seeing them as a small boy. One of my earliest childhood memories was of visiting the Capitol with my family. And I remember standing in the rotunda, literally surrounded by those battle-torn and blood-stained banners. And I'm sure I didn't realize at that young age the importance of the flags, but it made a lasting impression on me. And here I am some 50 years later, having been charged with the awesome responsibility of helping to care for them. So the flags were put into the cases in 1908, 1909. They stayed there relatively intact until the 1960s. And in that time, a decision was made by the state of Michigan to, I guess we could say, air quote, quote unquote, do a good thing for the battle flag collection. A lot of states were commemorating the centennial of the war, both North and South, in Michigan, and trying to do something to commemorate that event. And Michigan decided a good thing to do would be to send her battle flag collection out for, again, air quotes, quote unquote, conservation. That time the flags were actually sewn between dyed layers of net, literally through a sewing machine by the conservator. Basically every time that seamstress's needle went up and down in that flag, it put a hole into it and perforated it. This is very different than the conservation that we conduct now on the flags. So then the flags were very ceremoniously put back into their cases, and they pretty much stayed there till our building was restored. That project was started in 1989. Original intent of Save the Flags was to maybe encapsulate the rotunda cases to protect the flags from any damage that might come to them, you know, from during the restoration and the dust and dirt from that project. We started looking at the collection, though, and realized that if we didn't do something fairly soon, we were in danger of losing them entirely. They were literally falling to bits and pieces. Fragments of the flags lying on the bottoms of the cases in the rotunda. Even worse than that, red, white, and blue powder, which is the last stage in the disintegration of silk. And most of the flags were made of silk. It was a lightweight but very durable material. So say the flags started, we hired a consultant, nationally recognized textile consultant to come in. It was based on her evaluation that Save the Flags, which is made up of state capitol and museum personnel and reenactors and historians and descendants of men who actually fought beneath these banners. We made the group decision to remove the flags from the capitol. They were sent to the State Museum. We have a wonderful partnership with the State Historical Center and the State Museum just down the street from the Capitol. They supplied the space, a state-of-the-art archival space where we can properly care and preserve the collection. Some of the flags are in still such bad shape, though. They need further conservation. And what one of our goals is to raise the funds.
So let me interrupt you for just a second.
Yeah, please do.
So as I understand it now, there are no more battle flags inside our state capitol building.
Yeah, we have now our replicas. We made copies of about half of the Civil War battle flags. So there are copies of about 80 of them. The entire collection, I should mention, and I'll ramble on and on if you don't stop me, but the entire collection is about 240 flags, 160 are Civil War, and the remainder are flags carried by Michigan troops in the Spanish-American War and World War I. Our focus lately has kind of been on the Civil War flags because they're in more dire need of conservation. The latter war flags really weren't used in combat, and they're not as old as the Civil War flags. So relatively speaking, they're in pretty decent shape.
So Matt, why is symbolically these flags represent obviously tremendous sacrifice by the people of Michigan, but why in terms of the battle and all of that, why were they important?
Yeah, I'm really, really glad you asked about that. You know, so the flags were a direct link to the communities from which these men had formed. And Civil War regiments and companies formed in communities. I mean, you had entire companies, which was about 100 men of the 1,000-man regiment, that would form in small towns and communities. These men knew each other. The men of the regiment knew each other, and their battle flags were a direct link to those communities from where they had come. Many of these flags were very ceremoniously presented to the men of the regiment as they left for the field of war. And promises were made by the men to those ladies of the communities, the 10th Michigan Infantry Regiment. Their original presentation flag was literally given to them by the ladies of Flint, and it said so on the presentation plaque that was attached to the staff. So these boys, they made solemn pledges. They said this flag will become the pall, the funeral garment of the regiment before we surrender it to the enemy. Every time the men looked to that flag, they recognized that it was a direct link from where they had come and what they were fighting so hard for. Now, logistically, they're terribly important on the battlefield. We're talking 160 years ago. Obviously, people couldn't pull out their phone and text to each other where they were or where they needed to be on the battlefield. The only way a colonel could communicate with a 1,000-man regiment at full strength, which they very rarely were, was by directing his orders to the men who were in the color guard, who were there to protect the flag. And within the color guard, the color bearers, the non-commissioned officers, the corporal and sergeants who were assigned to carry the flags. So if he needed his regiment to advance, the order went to the flag bearer. He moved the regiment forward and the regiment followed that flag. If he needed the regiment to retreat, the flag bearer went back. If that flag bearer took his staff and planted it in the ground, every man of the regiment knew their job was to defend that battle flag and the regiment's position on the battlefield to the last man if necessary.
That's the old saying, rally around the flag.
It certainly is. It comes from the Civil War. The game I played as a child, Capture the Flag, comes from the Civil War. The Confederates recognized the surest way to dishearten and confuse the Union troops was by dropping the color bearer, by killing the color bearer, or even better, by capturing that Union battle flag. Union troops recognized this, of course, about the Confederate banners also, and it became a very deadly game, if you will, of capture the flag. Some of the most intense casualties usually took place around the color guard. We have instances of entire color guards being killed in single battles, and one battle up to 9 men died carrying the regiment's battle flag. That was the 24th Michigan at the Battle of Gettysburg.
I think you, in your literature that I reviewed before talking to you today, it talked about the flag bearer had basically a death sentence in many cases for taking that that duty. And one of the interesting things I learned was that they picked the tallest guys they could to carry the flag into battle. And
they liked them to be tall, and they liked them to be of the highest moral character. So these were not the the drudges of the regiment that were stepping up to volunteer for the duty. And many of them were volunteers. I mean, they volunteered to carry the colors. We had an incredible story here from Lansing of a man who volunteered to carry the colors in one fight and sent a letter home to his mother here in Lansing. Charles Foster was his name. And he said, you know, I volunteered to carry the flag in the last fight. And I know you're wondering why I would have volunteered for such a dangerous duty. He said, I was afraid that if I didn't volunteer, that the colonel would have to pick a man who had dependent children at home. And he said, me being free and single, I figured I wouldn't be missed if I was killed. In the next battle, Foster was in fact killed carrying the 3rd Michigan's battle flag. That was at the Battle of Fair Oaks down in the Peninsula campaign.
So the flag, when they brought it back, and I think you said it was in 1869.
66.
66. So that was essentially a year after the war ended.
It was. Yeah.
So did they gather all the flags back?
Well, yes and no. So the men had been ordered to return their colors to their respective states. So a lot of the northern states were having similar ceremonies around the time of ours. Some of the men, and I don't blame them one bit, were, shall we say, reluctant to turn over their battle flags to the maybe dubious care of the state of Michigan. So some of the boys held on to them, including the boys of the 10th Michigan Infantry Regiment, which formed in Flint. They held on to their original presentation flag, and it shows up periodically at their regimental reunions. You can see depictions of it, and, you know, in photographs, images of it. The last recollection we have of that presentation flag, it was in the ownership of one of the last men who had survived from the regiment. And we have sneaking suspicion that it could have possibly been buried with Mr. Barney when he passed away.
What was his name?
Marvin Barney was his name. He was from Flint. We found his obituaries, and kind of sadly for us, there's a number of references to the fact that his coffin was quote unquote festooned with flags. And we have a sneaking suspicion that it could have possibly been buried. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's in some citizen of Flint, maybe in a trunk or in a barn or an attic somewhere in Flint, and still survives.
Hopefully it's not at the pawn shop.
I hope not.
Well, look, let's switch gears here for a second. David Norris is the one who I must thank for introducing me to this. He's been talking to me about this for about the last 3 or 4 months. David, tell us the story about the 10th Regiment and its flag and your involvement with it.
Well, the 10th Michigan Infantry, as Matt said, was formed in Flint. And these were community gatherings. And while it was formed in Flint, it was made up of Genesee County, Lapeer County, Saginaw County men who joined here in Flint. My great-grandfather, Talman Owen, came from Almond and joined the 10th and served through the entire war. I've always known that. We've always talked in the family. Our family history is pretty well kept. And so I knew of Talman Owen. I knew that he was wounded at the Battle of Peachtree Creek in taking of Atlanta. And he was restored to service. And so it has to be, it's over a year ago. I didn't even know what the battle flag of the 10th Michigan looked like. And so I'm one of those individuals that I realized the importance of our state representatives on things having to do with state government, and contacted Representative Cheryl Kennedy and said, does anybody know what the battle flag of the 10th Michigan looks like? I'm assuming they contacted Matt, and I got a photograph back of this poor, tattered piece of silk. And first I thought, I don't think that could be the battle flag of the 10th. And then learned, yes, it is. In fact, one of three that we know existed. And Matt and Save the Flags has two of them. And the one that I was most interested in was the one that they fought under, that was presented to them by Colonel Lum, their colonel through the entire war. And Lum presented them with a flag in the late 1863, I think it was created. And they had it at the beginning of 1864. And they were a veteran regiment by then, meaning that a majority of the people had re-enlisted. Their term of enlistment had been up. And so Colonel Lum presented them with a flag, much like what the prototype that's behind me. And it fascinated me, and I decided I really wanted to create, for no particular reason, a full-size replica of what that battle flag looked like in 1864. And that began my journey of research, and I just had such great cooperation. I think Matt and I have become friends in the year of him having to deal with some of my silly questions, silly to me sometimes. He always takes it very seriously about the flag, so that when I recreate it, it will be very close to the way it looked in 1864.
So the flag behind you is from 1864, is that right?
This is the design from 1864.
And the names on that flag, maybe you could turn around and get your camera zeroed in on it and show us what those names are and what the significance of it is.
Well, when Lum presented this particular flag to the 10th Michigan, I'm assuming it was his decision to put battle honors on it. And many of the flags would have battle honors. I mean, the designs were not specific. And so this starts with the 10th Michigan Infantry, and then it goes from Farmington to Tunnel Hill. And these are places
where there was actually, they actually carried the flag into battle.
Absolutely. And areas that they had taken. And what's interesting is the Siege of Corinth was a massive engagement that the 10th was involved in support. But nowadays people kind of focus that engagement on a place called Shiloh. But the 10th was in support north, maybe in east or west, I'm not sure. But the 10th either was in support or on the front lines. And so once they had this flag, that was their history up to that point. And nothing else was added to this flag. And they had some horrendous fighting going through Georgia. In fact, I mentioned the Battle of Peachtree Creek, and the Battle of Peachtree Creek was the taking of Atlanta. That was the significance. And accounts of that time, people would relate that there was no greater carnage ever in such a localized area than the Battle of Peachtree Creek. And the Confederate Army had jumped the Union Army as they were moving on Atlanta, is what happened. So nothing else was added to this flag.
Do you know how many people from Flint were engaged in that battle?
I think what you say from Flint, from the 10th Michigan?
Yeah.
I would think it'd be close to 900, don't you think, Matt?
I would think. I know they had re-enlisted. I think, didn't they have almost 400 men when they re-enlisted?
Was it 400?
300 and some. I have it here somewhere in my notes. But I could look that up, actually. But there were, I think Dave was kind of referring to this, there were other regiments that were also engaged from Michigan. And regiments that participated in Sherman's March to the Sea, which, you know, Dave is referring to, including the 4th Michigan Cav. We have their battle flags also, and they formed in Flint. They were mostly Flint boys also. In fact, that regiment had the distinction of capturing Jefferson Davis at the end of the war.
So the Michigan regiment was the one that actually captured the leader of the Confederate Army.
Yeah, sure was. Yeah, that was a contingent. Confederate,
yeah. Yeah. Confederate, yeah, I guess is a better way to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And the 4th was organized in Flint?
Yeah, they were Flint boys. Yeah, the majority of them, like Dave said, with the 10th, some of the companies came from different parts of the state, but they organized and rendezvoused at Flint. And they had a beautiful, beautiful battle flag also, two flags in our collection, like the 10th has, that were carried by the boys. And in fact, I have a little replica. I didn't mean to jump to me again, but there's a replica of the 4th Cav right behind me in my window there.
Let's see.
Wow, it's in your window. Wow. So how many... I know it's terrible. My dad was a disabled vet. Was a disabled veteran and served in the United States Army Air Corps and then later the Air Force. But I can't ever keep track of all these different organizational structure things. So for somebody like me who has not only a fading memory but a lack of knowledge, could you tell us how many people from the Flint area, if you know, actually participated in various battles in the Civil War?
You know, I'd have to do the research on that just from the Flint area. I don't know if you have that number at the top of your head, Dave.
No, I really don't. And even with the 10th, I think I have bulk somewhere. I have bulk casualty numbers. Yeah. Of course, days as many people died from disease as died in battle. I mean, the attrition rate was pretty bad from the time they marched out of Flint.
What was the bulk casualty?
For Michigan, we had 90,000 who fought and 15,000 deaths. But as Dave said, it was kind of unusual to have a regiment have more men die of wounds than actually die of disease. Dysentery, you know, was a horrible killer during the war. And a lot of these boys from Michigan had never been farther than maybe 20 or 30 miles from their homes before the war and had never been exposed to a lot of these diseases. You know, sanitation was deplorable during the war. So most of them succumbed to disease. We only had one regiment from Michigan who had more men die of wounds than actually died of disease.
Which one was that?
That was the 8th Michigan. Yeah, in fact, sadly, a lot of those boys that had been captured during the war died in the Sultana disaster, the steamship on the Mississippi, the boilers blew. And the 8th had a lot of boys on the Sultana and then literally on their way home to Michigan and died in this horrible explosion.
Wow. Where's the eighth headquartered or was?
Oh, golly, again, you, I have to look it up for you. I become an expert on certain regiments when I'm studying or when I expect people to ask me questions about it. But I'd have to look that one up.
All right, guys, hey, we're going to get kicked off of here in 2 minutes. So
okay, well, be sure to.
It says it's going to end in 10 minutes. So we got.
Listen. What I really want to point out now, I've made this flag. That's personal. This flag is personal. What Matt and Save the Flags is doing is personal too, and he doesn't sit at the head of a or a co-chair of a exalted position that is totally fun, because the state of Michigan does not fund the conservation of these flags at all, other than the placement where they are. In the room being preserved there, but as far as the work on keeping them from deteriorating, none of that is funded by the state of Michigan, and that's all by donations. And when I found that out, one of the things that I did is I'm a member of Fellowship Lodge, which is a Masonic lodge in Flint, which was appropriate, and they have the Save the Flags has a promotion basically where you can adopt a flag. Numerous people may adopt the same flag, but you adopt the flag, that's $1,000. And that $1,000 doesn't go to, for instance, the flag of the 10th Michigan. It goes into where the need is mostly. And so we donated $1,000 to Save the Flags. And I think that's what I'm going to do when I get the big flag and I'm taking it around and showing it off, is I'm going to try to promote other people to adopt flags in that collection in order to preserve these treasures of our state.
Yeah, well, not to be political here about our flags and our military, but in recent days, we've heard a certain candidate talking about we need historical education about our heritage. Yeah. And when I started thinking about this project that you're involved in, Matt, I thought that's our heritage.
Yeah.
It's not the other heritage I saw this day in West Branch, where I saw some guy driving around in his four-wheel drive mud truck with two Confederate flags about the size of the one behind David flying behind his truck. And when you think about what you guys have just talked about, and I don't think we've conveyed in strong enough terms the symbolic significance to the people of Michigan for all this time. Some of that memory has faded, obviously, because we have generational loss of memory. But that guy in that truck driving through Flint, Michigan in 1868, he probably would have been hogtied.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have wanted to meet that farmer from Elmont.
No.
I don't think he would have been too interested in that.
No, I think you're right. You know,
and really, you know, when you think about it, I guess this was a question for you, Matt. I'm full of editorials, so I can mess it up a little bit. But I mean, obviously, this is everyone's flag in Michigan, of every belief, of every political party, of every color.
This collection literally belongs to the people of Michigan. These flags are a touchstone to our history. They're my touchstone to the history of the Civil War. You know, we've had a passage of the weeks and months and years and decades and centuries, but the prayer that these men had was that they would be remembered and the sacrifices that they made would be remembered. This battle flag collection is literally a touchstone to their history. It's a constant reminder of those 90,000 boys from Michigan who fought in that war, and the 15,000 that were buried in their blood-soaked uniforms in shallow, hastily dug graves across the battlefields of the country. Preserving this collection is our small way of making sure that their memory is preserved also. And every time I go into our flag storage unit and review these flags, it's a constant reminder of what this project is about. It's caring for them, but it's remembering them too.
You know, I visited Appomattox where the army surrendered, the Confederate army surrendered. And then there was a pardon given, which was the genius of, yeah, of President Lincoln, was forgiveness. And it seems to me that we have sort of this thing where we wanted to bring, you know, at least Lincoln did, and most of the other people, including those in our state, wanted to forgive and move ahead and move on together. That was the purpose of fighting. And so, you know, bringing out our flags may, in one point of view, might be that puts aside the symbol of division. But I think we've kind of got, the real history is we've lost the flag itself as a significant symbol of how united America was on a moral issue.
Go to a pre-COVID, even to baseball games and sporting events now, and I'm amazed at the number of men that don't even bother to remove their hats anymore when the national anthem is sung. And, you know, I was not raised that way, and you respect the flag and the part of what we're doing here with this project, you know. And you speak of the Union and North and Confederate soldiers. They many of them reconciled, you know. They turned out to reunions at Gettysburg, and instead of running towards each other to kill each other, they ran towards each other with open arms and open hands to shake the hands of these boys. And in fact, we had Confederate flags in our collection for a number of years, and we made the decision in 1941 to return those flags to their respective Confederate states. And they had a ceremony here at the Capitol where our governor turned them over to the governors of those states. So they were trying to reconcile, you know, even back then, the boys that fought in the war.
Let's hope that we can keep that message going. David, you got anything to say before they cut us off? Zoom's going to kick us out of their corner.
Okay, I just sure hope that people will check out Save the Flags in Michigan. Donate if you can. If you're a Mason like I am, there's a great history of Masons on both sides.
And David, we're going to go out, and I might even interrupt this podcast with a song by Neil Woodward. Tell us about that, if you can, just quick.
That song comes from verse that I wrote about Peachtree Creek, about my great-grandfather. And I was so fortunate that Neil Woodward, the minstrel of Michigan, was kind enough to put music to it and made
Peachtree. Well, thank you, Matt, and thank you, David, for an interesting visit. And good luck in your work, and all of those who would like to see it, we'll post the website address, and you can participate in the adoption program.
Well, thank you for the attention. And I think I need to hire Dave as a spokesperson for Save the Flags. So,
hey, Matt, it's an honor being on your first podcast.
Sounds good.
Hey, take care now, guys. Thank you. This is Arthur Bush. We're signing off. We want to save our flag. And this is Radio Free Flint. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tree Creek, fireflies hang sparkles all around. The ornament of light moves ghostly white. Tonight, death sleeps silent within the sweet warm ground. On a summer night in Genesee, I see the fireflies in Peachtree Creek. Shattered. by the ball, they shipped me home from hell. The 10th marched for Lincoln through the streets of old D.C. And I wondered, did the boys remember me? Peachtree Creek, fireflies hang sparkles all around. The ornament of light moves ghostly white. Night, death sleeps silent within the sweet warm ground. On a summer night in Jenin.